Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell, and I also have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. I am a columnist with MS News Today at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Welcome to the Multiple Sclerosis Podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell. Joining us today, once again, is Dr. Aaron Boster. Dr. Boster is a board-certified neurologist specializing in multiple sclerosis and related central nervous system inflammatory disorders. He decided to become a multiple sclerosis doctor at the age of 12, as he watched his uncle Mark suffer from the disease in an era before MS treatment was available. Dr. Boster grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and attended undergraduate school at Oberlin College. He earned his MD at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and completed an internal medicine and residency in neurology internship at the University of Michigan. He then completed a two-year fellowship in clinical neuroimmunology at Wayne State University. Dr. Boster participates in the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact. He is currently licensed to practice in Ohio, Alabama, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, Tennessee, Texas, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. Dr. Boster has been intimately involved in the care of people impacted by multiple sclerosis. He has been a principal investigator in numerous clinical trials, trained numerous multiple sclerosis doctors and nurse practitioners, and published extensively in medical journals. He lectures to MS patients and providers worldwide with the mission to educate, energize, and empower people impacted by MS. Dr. Boster lives in Columbus, Ohio, with his daughter, Max. Dr. Boster, thank you again for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you. For those who are a fan of the show, this is Dr. Boster's second time and not last time. So we're always joyful to have you join us. I want to just start by those of you who might not know, which I don't think are very many, but you do such an amazing job at translating some of the more difficult concepts around multiple sclerosis to people living with the disease. What led you to become such an incredible interpreter, adding an element of deep understanding on your social media? That's incredible.
That's really nice of you to say thank you. I would submit there's probably two things that have led to me really valuing communication with families that I interact with. The first is I got into this business when I was a kid. I decided I wanted to be an MS doctor when I was 12. Not because my Uncle Mark had MS. He had had MS from my earliest memory, but because my family couldn't get a hold of his doctor and they were scared and they were alone. And I watched my mom and my grandmother cry out of frustration, and no one should ever see their mother cry like that. And I promised my family that I would learn to do it better, which kind of led me on this mission-driven goal of trying to help families impacted by MS. I was the family member of someone with MS long before I knew what neuroimmunology was. I knew that sometimes you had to help my Uncle Mark move his bowels, and sometimes you had to help feed them long before I knew any of the science or the neurology. And so I think that's colored my perspective on things, maybe a little bit different than, say, the next doc. The second thing is that I learned really early on that when I was in practice, I started off in academics, and it's kind of an ivory tower, and we would write these highfalutin papers. And these papers were a bunch of letters and numbers that very few people understood. And I realized really early on that if I understand a concept and I can't express it to you, I might as well not understand it. Because if you're a clinician who's a non-surgeon, So you don't cut people to help them get better, then really you're helping people by request. So if I ask you to do something, but I can't explain why, it's very unlikely you're going to do it. So, you have a young person who really likes smoking cigarettes, say, don't smoke. They're going to say, no. But if I instead explain that smoking speeds up MS by 50% and can make your disease get worse faster, then I can educate you and then I can help you make an informed decision. And so I think it's those two elements that really drive me to try to figure out how to communicate this weird neuroimmunology in a way that someone can absorb and understand.
Well, you really do a wonderful job at that. And I love how the element of humanness came before the doctor. And not, I know doctors are human. I know doctors are inherently good. I love my doctors. But I love the element merge. I love those the merge of that and how you came to know the process as a little boy before you understood it as a scientist.
Thank you.
Now you're helping us do that. So thank you. How do you select your content, by the way?
So, I spend my work day in clinic seeing families with multiple sclerosis and trying to game out how to make the MS boring and allow them to live their best life despite having this condition. And so, I get video ideas based on what I talk about in clinic. So if I have a really difficult conversation with the family about suicidal ideation, when I go home at night, a lot of times I'll think, okay, well, what information would be relevant to someone else who might be having the same problem? And so a lot of times it's born out of that. It's just really taking things that I think benefit families in clinic, and then I say them on camera. And really, if you think about it, if I see you in clinic at 11:30 on Wednesday, that's when it's convenient for me to talk to you. That's not when it's convenient for you to hear me necessarily. And so if I want you to be able to absorb the message that I'm delivering, I find that if I can say it on YouTube and record it, then you can watch it whenever you want. You watch it at 3 o'clock in the morning in your bathrobe, potentially. And so I really use that as a tool. So when my patients who are in clinic come to see me, it's very rare that they'll leave clinic without an assignment. I want you to go to the channel. I want you to watch this video on this topic, and then we'll talk about it next time we see each other. And so that's really where the ideas come from.
I love that. I also align with that as a patient with MS because maybe at that time I'm not feeling particularly vulnerable to express what's on my mind. Maybe
Yeah.
there's a time when I do view that it's going to bring to mind things that would be easier for me to express at that time. Which
Amen.
brings to me to something we've spoken about at our previous meeting, which was these taboo, I say taboo, they're not taboo. They're difficult topics for people with MS to express. My dysarthria is embarrassing, but it's not difficult. It's embarrassing for me. What is difficult for people to talk about sometimes is mental health, suicidal ideation, sexual quality of life, sexual dysfunction, bodily fluids, bodily function. How and what are some of the preeminent issues that you find in practice come up, are more difficult to discuss, but need to be elevated?
So I think one of them is the down theres. So when I talk about the down theres, I'm talking about bowel, bladder, and bedroom. If you would like to make a human being miserable, mess with the down theres. So cause a bladder incontinence, cause a fecal incontinence, cause difficulty with achieving orgasm. I mean, these are critical things for the quality of a human being's life. And yet, they're normally not discussed in public. And so it's easy to get lost in a visit where we're focused on, are you responding to your medicine? And what does your MRI look like? And are you walking okay? And we may just gloss over the fact that you're peeing your pants. And so I think that the down there is an area which is very, very important and needs to be discussed head on.
I
And so
agree.
that's a big one. I sometimes may embarrass someone inadvertently because I'll ask about sex. I want to know, like, is lubrication okay? Can you achieve orgasm? Are you interested? And I tell people it's not because I'm trying to be nosy, but it's an important component of quality of life. And if it's my goal to help you live your best life, that's part of it, right? I also want families to know that I'm a safe place. So part of the reason that I bring these topics up so frequently is to let someone listening know, well, gosh, he's talking about it. He's probably okay discussing it with me. I also think you touched on the other big area, which isn't addressed enough, and that's mood. And so people impacted by MS are twice as likely to experience depression compared to the general population. They're twice as likely to experience anxiety compared to the general population. People impacted by MS that have a higher risk of bipolar disorder. I mean, there's a host of invisible yet very, very important mental health problems that someone with MS can have. And unaddressed, it is insidious and it colors everything gray and it can destroy the fabric of your life. You can end up failing in your primary relationships. You can end up not performing well in your career. And yet it's got a little bit of a social stigma attached to it. And so I think
How do
that,
we change that, doctor?
well, one way is I tell people that I have horrible depression. I'm very open about that. I take two medicines because one's not enough. I see a counselor, I do all the things. And I'm a
Thank you.
doctor, which doesn't matter at all, right? So I try to normalize it through being honest. I think asking someone as a clinician, me asking, say, hey, listen, everybody gets sad and blue. You have a high risk of that. Tell me how you're doing. Those kind of things, I think we have to approach it head on is the short answer to that problem.
I
And
agree.
so really, if I talked about two buckets, it's the up there's and the down there's that are super important. They're invisible to the outside observer and they have to be addressed.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why I really love talking to you because these issues are so important for quality of life. I suffer from immense anxiety that has gotten only worse as my disease has progressed. I find myself completely flummoxed with thoughts I can't organize like I used to. Or what's worse is anxiety you can't pinpoint. You begin to feel like you're crazy and you're not. And these
Amen.
things are so crucial to be discussed. I discussed them with my doctor. He, like you, is open and easy to talk to. But it's very hard for people to get there sometimes, to understand that I have someone I know that will not talk to a mental health professional because of what happened in her family history of her parent being labeled and therefore not getting medical care. And whether or not that was real or perceived, it's real to her.
Sure.
And that is anything. So I really respect the conversation. And also sexual health is such a very valid, normal part of life. Yet those of us with MS might assume that, oh well, it's just
Yeah.
gone.
I
I've
would say
that,
absolutely
yeah,
not.
this is about
Absolutely.
my sexual quotient. It's a hairbrush.
Yeah.
So is that normal? I don't think so. Is it normal to me? Yeah. So, but how does someone begin? Where does someone begin if they're not your patient?
So one secret weapon, which I really, really suggest people leverage, is to come to the appointment with questions and concerns written down. So I have a prop. All right, so I've got a piece of paper here. So you write down in the quiet of your own heart, I'm concerned about my erectile function. I sometimes wet my pants. I sometimes have thoughts of wanting to hurt myself. Whatever it is, you put it down on a piece of paper, you number it, because then when you arrive to the doctor's office and they're doing all the things, they're doing the testing and the labs, and it's very discombobulating, and the doctor has things that they want to talk about, you have your list to fall back on. And so what you do is you say, hey, doc, I made a list today of some things that I need to go over with you. The doctor becomes ethically and culturally obligated to let you go through the list. And so that way, if you get nervous or forget, it's on a piece of paper. That way, if you're a little bit uncomfortable, you can just read it. And I've even had patients say, look, I wrote some things down, but I'm a little bit embarrassed. Can I just show it to you?
Oh, I like that.
And
That's a
then I
great
can just read it.
suggestion.
So that's a really good way of doing it. And I think, other things that you can do when you start the visit, say, "Hey, doc, I'm really excited to see you today. I have a couple things that I was hoping we could talk about before we leave," just to set it up. Another tool that can be very helpful is to bring a buddy. So bring a village member. So bring a very close confidant village member and tell them, "I really want to talk about fill in the blank topic, and I'm a little bit nervous. So I need you to be my wingman." If the doctor says, "Well, we have a lot going on," the wingman can chime in. The village member can chime in and say, "Doctor, I know that this is so important to them. Would you please listen?" They can kind of help. And that can be another very, very powerful tool.
I like that too. It's very normal to feel, even, people look at me, you've had, I've had MS, what, like 16, 17 years. Oh, you must go to the doctor and not get nervous at all. Absolutely not. I sit there and I'm like, I don't want to bring it up today. But it's
I try to tell
okay.
train, I try my trainees when I've trained MS fellows and nurse practitioners, when you see someone, that's one person out of maybe 20 that's on your list that day. But for that person, this is arguably one of the largest meetings they're going to have this year. And we have to be very respectful of that. We really do. And there are a lot of things that need to go on mechanically during the course of the visit, but I like to remind folks, and so if you're listening, I want to remind you, it's your body, it's your brain, it's your life, and it's your insurance money. And so you're allowed to be selfish. You're allowed to say, "Hey, listen, this is really bothering me, and I want to make sure that we talk about it because it's what's important to me today."
Absolutely. And this also brings me to my next point of the importance of a comprehensive care team, which you offer at the Boster Center for MS. Can you tell a little bit about your model and how important that comprehensive care team is?
Absolutely. It's a fool of a doctor who thinks that they can address a chronic neuroimmunologic condition as complex as MS with just a pill. That's nonsense. That's complete nonsense. So, if you're going to help someone make their disease boring and help them live their very best life, it's inadequate to just give them medicine. And so, when I'm thinking about trying to make MS boring, I have this little saying, "I want you to be five for five in your fight against MS," because there are five things. One of those five things is a medicine. The other four are not medicines. And so, if we're going to really do our best job to try to lay waste to this disease or try to wrangle it to the ground, we need to bring all the different tools to bear. And yes, I think a neurologist is a team member. Like, that's great. But sometimes we need an ophthalmologist and a urologist. Sometimes we need a physical therapist. Sometimes we need an occupational therapist. Sometimes we need a talk therapist. Sometimes we need different team members and different components to help that person live their best life. And so, do you have to go to a center that has all the whistles and bells? No, not at all. You just need an open line of communication and an open provider. So if we collectively identify that the down theres ain't going so well, I need to know of a pelvic floor physical therapist, or I need to know of a good listening urologist that I can refer you to. And that becomes a team member. So they can help you out with that piece. It's
Absolutely.
really all, it's all about like trying to figure out like where the pain points are, and then what we're going to do to overcome them. And then we just bring village members in to make that village as big and robust as necessary so that we can beat it.
And I love the robust village. My village has grown and morphed over the years as my disease has and different needs. It's kind of like a tool belt on my toolkit. I like to fine-tune my mental health. Certain times I go and I'm no fool to believe my antidepressant is going to help me only, and then I'm free to go. No, I need to go discuss what's triggering my anxiety and
We've
how
got to
that's
do
morphed.
the hard work. You got to do the hard work. You got to talk through the trauma. You got to learn the techniques to deal with the stressors. You have to practice the mindfulness. You have to game out the conversations. You have to work on the exercise. I mean, none of this is easy, and almost always the answer is multifactorial. And so that's what we have to do.
And I'm very appreciative of that. It's how I embrace my mental health and how I embrace my pain, how I embrace anything with my marriage and my relationship. I can't just go, it's your fault. You don't understand what I'm going through. We've been married 28 years, but see ya. I do some days, don't get me wrong. I don't get it right. We have this tool I want to share with others right now. It works only insofar as, like, you'll get it after I say it, that my husband doesn't always say the candle's on. So when we're having, we went to therapy to kind of fine tune, which has worked great for us, right? And we have a candle. When both of us are having just a hell of a day, we can't deal with the heavy stuff. It's an electric candle. We put it on in the morning, and that means I just can't deal with the heavy stuff today. You know, be kind. At the beginning, he's like, candle, it's on, it's on. I don't want to talk about it. I'm like, hello, candle. No, I might have done a little bit about that too, but it's tools that if you can work with them, they help.
Amen. 100%. That's very, very smart.
Well, it's not always used well, even on me, but it's a tool. And I encourage people to try and find what works for them because it's not easy, and it's okay that it's not easy.
You're absolutely right. And we'll use the example of counseling for a second. When you have an intimate relationship, a spouse, a loved one, a first degree relative, that's beautiful, but it's also a barrier to finding solutions sometimes. Because if
Yes.
you tell your spouse that you're sad, they feel an emotion. They're not objective, they're very subjective. And whereas, yes, that's beautiful, it shuts down the ability to find new pathways and new ways of doing things. So when you talk to a counselor who is not like an intimate member of your life and you say, I'm sad, they say, And it creates a sounding board to then be able to find those aha moments and those solutions.
Yeah.
And so that can be true in individual counseling. It can be true in couples therapy. And it's just one example of where that team member serves a really important purpose to enhance your life and to help you optimize your relationship with those key village members.
Yes, very well said. Because so often you really have to get dirty before you're going to get more clarity on how to be okay in the mess. I'm not going to promise you getting clean. I'm going to promise that you're going to feel okay in the muck. And you might not every day, but life is about things being a little bit askew.
Sure, there's that great saying, happiness is not avoiding the rain, it's learning to dance during the storm. Or, I think I butchered it, but you get the
No,
idea.
hey, you butchered it, but my brain went perfect, so it's okay. Spot on. No, but I appreciate that, and I think in my tenure with this disease, I've dealt with the up theres and the down theres, and still have, and it will be a continuum to deal with. I encourage people that, to keep going, and I still have things that need to be met, but it's so crucial to put it out there to the professional because they really, what you said about the person closest to you is true. They absorb it with a sentimentality or emotion where someone else can lead you on a path to further your own ability to cope with it correctly. You
Takes
know,
different village members for different things.
absolutely. And not everything's going to work, and that's okay too. From solutions to people. I've had friends drop out of my life. It's painful, but it's also, it's also the way it goes, and it's about getting that help around it.
Amen.
You know, it's so funny when I watch you, Dr. Boster. I picture your YouTube with the clouds going off and the ears popping and the sound. I'm like, where is it all? How can people find you on? I know most know, but I would love you to share your address.
Oh, for sure. So, I spend a lot of time traipsing around social media. So, I have a YouTube channel, which is simply my name. It's Aaron Boster, MD. And so, if you're someone impacted by MS, I would invite you to subscribe to that channel where I make weekly videos to try to educate and empower and energize families impacted by MS. I have a presence on Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that. I'm really proud of my center's website. So it's bostermms.com. And we have a lot of resources on that website. And one that I'll point out is a free newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter that we put
I get
out.
it. Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. It's called the Boster Corner. And so you can find it on the website. You can sign up for it if you want to. You can cancel whenever you want. And once a month, we kind of share the latest and greatest in MS research, the things that we're doing here at the Boster Center, and how you can find me online. So for example, this Saturday, I'm doing one of my monthly live streams. When people say, oh, where do I learn about that? You know, you can find it in the newsletter. So those are probably the easiest places where you can track me down.
Oh, great. I'm going to have all of those resources in this episode's description.
Oh, thank you. That's really awesome. Thank you very
You want to
much.
know that I dread that paragraph every time I have the podcast that I won't decimate it or get it upset. See, almost got out of it unscathed. Did not.
Always well.
And I don't edit this because this is real.
That's
Dr.
fair.
Foster, you are always a pleasure. I wish I could talk to you more about this. I'd love to have you back.
With great pleasure. I'll come
I
back.
think it's very important for people to understand, and as I live with this, just the reality is okay. It's hard enough to deal with some of the aspects of MS. Don't be harder on yourself when we already are by being human.
Yeah. I tell people, let other people be mean to you. Don't be mean to yourself.
Oh, I love that. You are a definite blessing in our community, and I appreciate your time, Doctor.
It's an honor. Thank you very much. And I look forward to the next time we get to chit chat. Take care.
Absolutely. And thank you to our listeners at Multiple Sclerosis News Today. This is the MS Podcast, and I'm your host, Jen Powell. Share your thoughts on this episode through social media. You can find MS News Today on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us to keep updated on the latest news and to never miss new content and initiatives. Click the links in this episode's description.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our Multiple Sclerosis News Today forums, a trusted MS community ready to welcome you anytime.